Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
Hey there, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. My name is Scott McKenzie, and you're joining the number one industrial-related podcast in the universe. And you know what? It's dedicated to you, the industrial professional, the companies that get it done. You're bold, you're brave, you dare greatly, you innovate, and you're not just changing the world, which you are, you're changing lives, which you are. And boy, do we need you now more than ever. Thank you very much for what you do. That's why we celebrate you on the Industrial Talk Podcast. Thank you. Big time. Jason Kay is on the interview list today. He is the founder of IMS Evolve, and they're out of the UK, but they are a global powerhouse company. Let's get going. They got great, another company with great technology, with great insights, with great wisdom, dedicated to, you know, providing solutions. That's what they are. They are solutions providers. Anyway, they fit right into the overall framework that we have been establishing on the Industrial Talk Podcast, this particular platform, and why we're just so passionate, not just about what we do, but you, the heroes that are really a part of this particular story of the Industrial Talk Podcast. We need to survive. We depend on you to survive. We depend on you to rebuild. I'm not manufacturing like you, but we depend on you to rebuild. And we depend on you to prosper. Because if you're prospering, we benefit. If you're rebuilding, we benefit. If you survive, we benefit. That's why you guys are heroes. That's why this is so important. And how do you do that? You got to retain talent. You got to figure that one out. You got to manage those risks and there's strategies around those, whatever that looks like, right? You've got to save money, make money. You got to be resilient going forward. No doubt about it. Absolutely no argument. The Industrial Talk Podcast, the platform that we've created, helps provide solutions to those very important topics. We have created a platform that collaborates with the best. Not just internally, externally, collaborate. What are these individuals thinking? What are they doing? How can they help you? And they're willing to work with you. Yeah, that's collaboration. They have technology. They innovate. And it's not just innovate from that the tech point of view, but it's innovation from leadership. It's innovation on how you're going to sell and market and brand more. You've got to be innovative. You just do. And you got to be able to have your organization be structured in such a way that is innovative, that has the ability to be resilient in challenging times, like the ones we're going through right now. You've got to also educate. The way of doing business pre-virus is completely the way doing business today. The business as usual has completely been flipped on its head, right? Nobody's going to say, nah, it's the same for me. No. Supply chain, sourcing, sales and marketing, operations, you name it, it has been impacted in a massive way globally. Educate. And we've got a platform out on Industrial Talk called the Industrial Academy that features all these individuals that have been on the podcast. Yeah, that's what it does. They're leaders and they're willing to give of themselves. It's amazing. And then finally, you got to do it with a sense of speed. If you're not educating, it's hard to move forward. If you're not innovating and educating, it's hard to move forward. And if you're not collaborating and talking to people who and listening to people who have insights, it's really hard to move forward. So you got to do all that. You got to do it with speed and you got to move forward. And you got to make mistakes because we're not going to hit home runs every time we're at bat. And we might strike out here and there. But, you know, we dust ourselves off, we get back up, we could do it again. And we rinse and repeat and do it again and again. That's how important you are. That's why you're heroes. I can't bring it any other way. We're trying to do everything we can on the industrialtalk.com platform to help you succeed and feature the best of the best. And that's my role. That's my responsibility. That's what my purpose is. Go out to industrialtalk.com. Find out more. Let's start collaborating. Let's start innovating. Let's all do it together. And I guarantee you we'll survive, rebuild, and prosper. All right. IMS Evolve is the company. Jason K is the individual. I don't even know how to begin. I mean, the technology that they deploy around the world is really spectacular. A lot of wisdom, a lot of insights, a lot of, boy, I'm telling you, talk about a company that moves forward. All right. Jason K is the individual. Enjoy the conversation. Jason, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Absolute honor to have you join and talk to the listeners about, I mean, what your company's all about. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Doing very well.
Now, for the listeners out there, we're gonna have to level set a little bit. Let's give us a little background on who Jason is. What's your background? And then we're gonna venture on into the application of this, let's say, digitization within the retail space, and forward. Okay, give us a little background.
Sure, I spent some time in relatively small consulting organizations that focused on post-acquisition integration, before moving on in helping some private investors have a look at some build and buy acquisitions that they were dealing with. In the course of working from there, I bumped into who were my fellow co-founders in IMS. And we got together and had a look at a fantastic problem set that was set to them by one of the UK's major retailers in being able to get a single view across, in this case, their refrigeration infrastructure that was being run on multiple different platforms. We saw a great opportunity in that, and we got together and founded the company.
Now, one of the things that, if I had a nickel every time somebody talked about, you know, digitization or industry 4.0 or whatever this, devices and cloud and everything's associated with that, I think that it's, I'd be a millionaire. Now, what's interesting about our conversation and your conversation going forward is you take that digitization and you apply it into more of a retail environment and the value associated with that. Give the listeners a little background, sort of what the challenges from a defined retail, what you're talking about, and then the challenges that they face, and then where do you see it moving forward? Can you do that for us?
Sure. I mean, the very first area of focus for us was with a founding customer. And so by definition, it was a collaboration between us and them that stayed in very close proximity to their business challenges and business outcomes. And I think that served us very well. So from inception, the company was not about building its vision of a great architecture and applying it. It was about business problems first and being close to what your customer needed to resolve. The major focus for them was food safety and food waste. And that really has become an overarching principle for us. Food waste is a significant global challenge, and it's a challenge for humanity as a whole. So if you look at the agricultural land employed around the world, we can grow enough high quality calories to feed between 12 and 14 billion people. But with a population in the world sitting around 7.5 billion, we've got 1.5 billion of those in significant calorific poverty or hungry, right? Yeah. And there's lots of reasons for that that not necessarily can be addressed by IoT or a digital transformation of itself, but it forms a passion for our company, which is where we have infrastructure that we can take advantage of now, where we can apply digital insight and where we can ensure that outcomes happen, we have to be challenging ourselves to hit those problems. And a lot of our customers and a lot of those throughout what we call the cold chain, which is the refrigerated bit of the supply chain, take those challenges very, very seriously. And those of us that also care about carbon as a global issue should recognize that the food waste that's going directly into landfill is producing huge volumes of methane, which is many, many times dangerous a greenhouse gas than carbon is. So from a contextual standpoint for society itself, for the future of humanity of the planet, and for doing the right thing and climate change, there's a very heavy significance in and around food waste.
That's, you know, I never really thought about that, but that's an interesting point. Because now, let me go back to your founding customer. They recognized that there was, how can we control food waste, right? How can we ensure safety? Good, too great. I'm glad that they thought about that. So on a real life schedule, they came to you, you guys worked it, and what type of results occurred as a result of that?
Well, it's been a long journey now. Initially, the first technical challenge they had is that they had different manufacturers had built the control systems over their equipment. And those control systems are the bits that manage the mechanical parts of the machine to deliver the outcome. In this case, holding things at an appropriate temperature. Right. And they were all closed box systems, and it was very difficult to get access to data. So when they went to the market and said, well, actually, I want to be able to see everything. I want to be able to plan on an estate level. I've become the most successful retailer in my market because I do things on macro scale. I leverage my scale. And I'm really frustrated that I can't do that here and apply that. And every OEM's reaction was, it's easy. Just rip everybody else's stuff out and put everything on my platform. And that posed them a couple of problems. A, it was an almost insurmountable investment hurdle to rip everything up. A lot of people discount the fact that it's not just about changing one widget for another. This is quite intrusive. You've got to close the shop and not trade and do a lot of stuff to achieve that complete overhaul. So, you know, there's lost sales as well as the capital hurdle of doing that.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And we weren't trying to sell a new widget. We were very clear from our inception that we were going to put a software enablement layer over the top that was able to take data from it, process and analyze that data independently from the limitations of the computers essentially it was sitting on, the electronic computers it was sitting on, and be able to read other bits of data and make smarter decisions and not just tell our customer, here's a lovely big report about the decisions you should make, but actually get into their workflow and make sure those things happened and then make sure that the result on the other end of it happened. And so that very much encapsulated what for us has come to be known as IoT. So we kind of feel that just taking data out and representing it or reporting on it to us doesn't represent IoT. IoT is about getting that data out, being able to put it in context with anything from any source that aids you make a better decision, and then ensure that once you've made that decision, it goes to the place where the decision can be actioned, and then make sure that at the output of that action, we've got the result we wanted.
Now, this journey that you've been on with the founding, one of the founding customers, this journey, what was sort of the realization that took place of like, now we were at this of food, you know, spoilage or waste. Now we're here. This impacted our bot. What was sort of the benefits associated with your solution?
Well, the quantum of savings were well in excess of 50% of the losses that they were achieving or exposed to due to failure to notice something was wrong. Wow. Or the machine failing. So what it didn't do was cover the cracks of them buying too much of something and it not selling, right? But what it did do was resolve the fact that, you know, before you had real visibility of these things, you had to be reliant on someone eyeballing a problem and then doing the right thing about it. But when you've got a very granular minute-by-minute view of what's going on in real time, you can tell them what's going wrong, how long they've got something to do about it, check in on them to make sure it's done, and hold them to account because they've taken ownership of that process, you're in a position to sort of enforce a behavior pattern and reward the right behavior pattern inside the business that really allows you to affect and drive change. So it's, what are you asking me to do? Why should I do it? What's the benefit to me? And when you've got business models that are often arranged in a structure whereby if that store, individual store, incurs that loss, it hits their bottom line. It affects their store being able to get their bonuses. So you've got to recognize how people are being incentivized, allow them to digest an insight that will help them be incentivized, and partner with them to deliver that outcome. So, and if they see you as the friend, not the police of the action, then as the people that are enabling them, not holding them to account, even though inherently within that cycle to keep the behavior going, you do, then you've got much more chance of success. And I think that some of the most powerful learnings of ours are not just technological, but are the insights into how we can adopt change and sustain the benefits of change.
Yeah, every time I have this conversation, it always results down to people, culture, and sustaining whatever behavior you want to move forward that is beneficial to your organization. Technology, from my perspective, is just an enabler. And if you don't, it still gets down to the human element to being able to take that information in a such a way and act upon it. And I like that quite a bit. Now, we're going to go into it. Now with these founders, this founding customer, you said, yeah, big time, great success, value, and we're always going to continue to improve upon it and whatever. Where do you today, where do you see some of the challenges today in the adoption of these solutions within that type of space, that market?
I think that the market will have a lot of projects with the title IoT over them. And I think earlier in our conversation, I kind of encapsulated the breadth to which something needs to scale to genuinely call itself IoT. And I think one of the barriers is exactly that. So there's a lot of point solutions out there that do one thing. And if you think of an organization that's got thousands of stores and hundreds of thousands of unique bits of equipment, they're not going to run a wire to every single one and have a vendor looking after every single one. And also, if all you're doing is moving data from control systems at the edge to some sort of big reporting engine, big data engine, or graphical user interface at the center, what have you really done? So our view is that value release has to be the focus of the solutions. And too many organizations in their marketing literature are taking the data from one place to the other, analyzing it and generating clever insight, but that's the end of it. But from that point, they're extrapolating in their marketing message to claim all of the output benefits that you would achieve if you did something with that data. And we see that a lot of IoT programs, we go into new customers, we're expanding at a fantastic rate. We're going into new customers, and on the wall of those customers are the ghosts of IoT past. There's all these boxes drilled to the wall that must have been doing something at one point, but never took off. And that's a lot to do with, in our view, that crossing the bridge of the value gap, or bridging the value gap, we call it. If you don't do that heavy lifting for your customer, it's going to be extremely difficult. These organizations are not running fat on resource. So if you've got something that's going to take a huge amount of resource, put a huge amount of responsibility and risk on people's shoulders who are already making risky and difficult decisions, then you're going to die on the vine, even if ostensibly there's an inherent value there. And that's a real focus for us. So we build our, essentially we're putting a piece of infrastructure into that environment, whether it's virtualized software-wise or there's a bit of hardware doing compute at the edge. And we focus on some very, very well-defined areas of value release. So we save them energy by making the machines work better. We save them consequential loss by making sure the things that machine's supposed to do, like keeping the food safe and keeping it aesthetically looking great so you don't have to mark it down to get it off the shelf, and by making sure that they are spending effectively in their maintenance and capital replacement regimes. So retail's a super tight margin business. Generously, you know, 5% margin is doing good in the food retail environment. So if you think about the transformative impact, just driving out what is accepted operational cost today at a 5% margin and putting it straight on the bottom line. In other words, money they would have spent, they'd have had to make 20x that in sales to achieve the equivalent impact on profitability. So it's a very exciting capability within a retail environment. And as long as you are close enough to those customers to understand their business models, be sensitive to it, but also be incredibly sensitive to what they have to do to achieve the result, then IoT starts to fulfill its promise. But if you sit back and say, look at my pretty pictures, or look at my incredibly insightful report, you're probably not getting close enough.
And I never really thought of it that way. And I didn't, I think your analogy of the title of IoT, the definition of what that looks like from your perspective versus just the terminology that exists in the market today. Are you doing IoT, or do you have edge compute? And it's sort of, I would imagine a lot of companies are saying, I need to do this, but then they do it and they spend the money and achieve what they shouldn't. And I like your term value release. I think that that's an interesting, I like that a lot. Now, let's say we start to coalesce around the right definition of IoT and the right definition of what those value release targets need to be. Where do you see the future going? How do you see the embrace of this going forward?
Well, the future is very much about taking, so we've with many customers taken that first step of taking the mission critical infrastructure from their building, really focused around those value propositions of energy maintenance and avoidable waste and waste of hours in store and so on, and pulling them further into the digital eco structure of the business itself. So we're now starting to use an example of a value release mechanism that we've got in play, a lot of IoT systems are sealed units in and of themselves, or if they've got an API, it's at the top end, but they're not expecting data inputs at the top end, and they're not expecting to be able to use that insight to write down to the fridges. So let me give you an example that might bring that alive. Retailers traditionally had three cooling strategies for food. One was kind of produce, which is salad-y stuff and so on. The other was meat, and inside meat, you would be chilling to raw meat, but actually you'd have all of the products, cooked meat and dairy and all sorts of things in that category, and then there was frozen. So we did some work with a university and the Food Standards Agency and so on, and we looked across a major supermarket's produce SKU. And actually, for absolutely optimum temperature management, there was opportunity for, in some very dense SKUs, maybe 12 or 14 cooling regimes.
Yeah.
Now, you couldn't apply them because just about how many fridge cases they had and so on. But we recognized that in the bigger supermarkets, there was room for seven. So moving from three to seven. And because they were erring on the side of risk, we were able to remove millions of degrees of cooling because they were slightly overcooling everything.
Right.
So the analogy
that... I would do the same thing. I was like... I'm going to be used Fahrenheit. If 32 Fahrenheit is good, 30 is better. You know,
yeah,
I mean, I would do the same thing.
Sure. And because the reason they did that is they couldn't possibly know what was in those refrigeration cases, and they couldn't change what temperature they were keeping without getting a qualified engineer to come out and tweak a few things. Now, that risk of you don't know what's there, we were able to integrate into a great system our customer had already invested in, which was knowing which product was on which shelf. And they had actually designed this so that they could merchandise things beside each other. So let's think Thanksgiving, we've got turkey and we've got the ready-made gravy now in the refrigerator beside it, right? So that people would buy them at the same time.
Right.
And they do that at multiple seasonalities and with offers. So with a real-time integration to that and our ability to real-time read and write across the refrigeration controls, we were able to match the two up. Now, they had a completely different view of which asset was called what. And our system was able to translate the two. If you can imagine, it's the equivalent of one, which fridge case is which, being written in French and the other in German. And we translated them both and then spoke the native languages back to those systems. But that allowed us to be able to change dynamically the temperatures in those fridges and take millions of degrees of cooling out. So you're talking about in a thousand supermarkets, like a $7 million reduction in energy consumption overnight, just because you'd reduced the demand as a whole.
It's brilliant.
But what really excited them is when you're holding things at the right temperature, we call it the watery yogurt anecdote. So if you overchill something, it gets squeezed. So it gets thermodynamically squeezed. You know, it's why things dry out in your refrigerator. And if you ever open a yogurt and it's got all that water in the top, some of that's natural settlement, but a lot of it's because it's been chilled like it was a raw fillet steak. It's been squeezed. So a lot of people pour it out because they think it's icky. You should actually stir it back in, otherwise you're just eating dehydrated yogurt. But it's an example of the impact that has on the quality of the product. And it impacts the color of the meat. And you've seen already sliced meat, which people often merchandise standing up in the fridge. You get all that liquid in the bottom. That's because the cooked meat's been squeezed. So what they recognized is that over this particular retailer had a view of produce SKUs, and they had dashboards for them in their customer complaint centers. And within 6 weeks, they were seeing up to a 30% reduction in customer complaints across some key products, just because it hadn't, the integrity of the product hadn't been attacked by overcooling. And that's an incredible impact. That's much more exciting to a food retailer than a few million bucks on their energy bill.
See, this is really intriguing, because I can relate to you and your stories, because I go to the market and I see, you know, there's that yogurt, there's water in it. And sometimes it's more and less, or overcooked or over chilled. Like sometimes I get meat that's frozen. And I like the fact that if you could sort of optimize the way you cool your food and care for your food, then you're still minimizing waste. You're optimizing value, meaning people are like, yeah, that's good. Good job. Right. Yeah. Right. And you're saving energy, because not everything has to be chilled at 30 degrees.
Absolutely. And it's an example of that proximity to business model. And that's like increasing. That. So we're building momentum in that. How does the type of products that people are buying relate to how effectively they've been kept? How does how they've been kept with positional sensors in the store relate to how long someone dwells in front of that fridge case? And when they dwell a long time, is it because they're going to buy it or because they're not going to buy it? What is it about the aesthetic dynamic of that that we're getting? And it's allowing us to see. So having gone through the heavy lifting on behalf of the customer to be able to pay for this infrastructure, the core focus then is to continue to innovate, and continue that path of innovation is toward greater customer satisfaction, greater customer retention, and greater acceleration of their business model. That's our job, and that's how we see it. So we don't stop at energy consumption and bits and bytes or clever reports on their maintenance contractors. We're there to make their business model sing better by through digitization.
And I would imagine it with that singing, of course, through digitization, through technology, through this innovative approach, there's less, I mean, you're just sort of leveraging the technology. So you don't even have to really go out to that case and play around with it. You're even making moves, individual people movement, more efficient as well, because you just you got the technology that's handling the situation. I like that a lot. I like it a lot.
I mean, it's pretty cool, really powerful. So when we get, I draw an analogy. You know, there were big telco companies like Nortel and Lucent out there that had incredible technology, incredibly powerful companies, but it was closed box, it was closed loop, it was dedicated infrastructure. And even though the initial hubs and switches and routers that came out in the IP defined world probably didn't catch up to the functional capability you had, you know, multiple people video conferencing and stuff was happening on Nortel and Lucent infrastructure way before it came to the internet, latterly again on that infrastructure. But that freedom, that flexibility, that those barriers being taken away for innovation, that speed of innovation, these are the really important things. So, you know, for us to bring all of that reactivity into the software-defined environment is incredibly important. Getting it out of those closed box machine control systems into software. And it's enabled us to be fleet of foot and continue to be future-proof and actually helping our customers push the boundaries. But also it came into its own during COVID, when there were different strains and stresses on those retail environments. People were buying stuff at ridiculous rates at the beginning. So they were having to re-merchandise those refrigerators really, really quickly, which puts a different kind of strain on them. And you know, being able to control for that so that they weren't creating false positives and being broken down. Taking the ASHRAE recommendations and the focus of our customers to have the HVAC systems change the fresh air in the building at a higher rate. I mean, that's a negative impact on energy, but it's a positive impact on safety. And then looking at when things were breaking down and making a judgment call to say, well, actually, we can change the settings on this and it'll hold its temperature in its environment. And that means we can wait to call out the guy to fix it when the store's closed so that we have much less risk of human interaction during this time, because that's one of the parameters we're trying to achieve. And being able to do that all from a central broadcast capability was really transformative for our customers. And to do the job our system does, it has to be able to do that kind of stuff anyway, apply some rules, make sure it happens, make sure the end person is informed about what they have to do and what's expected of them, and then making sure it happens. We were able to have conversations with our customers and apply these things in hours, if not a couple of days of just getting it approved by them, not, you know, sending hundreds or thousands of trucks out there to go and tweak and change things.
Man, I can have this conversation. I mean, how do you see, and this is going to be the last question, how do you see the adoption happening? I mean, are people are just, I mean, from a retail perspective, because they're on narrow margins and all of that stuff, I'm sure that there are some economic models like you got to have X amount of stores and to make it worthwhile, and then you can deploy the capital and so on and so forth. How has the, have you seen the adoption starting to pick up a little bit? But once again, to your definition of IoT, right?
Yeah. I think that certainly curiosity is out there. Adoption is happening. Like I said, most retailers will have a number of projects under the banner of IoT. We're seeing real explosive growth in our organization and through partners and through direct interactions with customers. The level of maturity, and that's not just in US and European marketplaces, but throughout the world. And the focus on how is digital going to make me better, that ongoing pressure on the business model of physical infrastructure, retailers, stores, when there's online competition. And we really focus with our food retail customers on those two places. One, absolutely best of breed, moving faster than anyone else, ability to release waste from their operational expenditure, but also help them raise the bar. So for organizations that are serving customers in store, they have to be able to adapt to different models in context of COVID, but B, the best thing they can possibly do to make it difficult for online players to move into their market is to lift the threshold of quality yet higher.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that the online players will be very wary of is if you've got a ubiquitous brand, and everyone knows who you are and your one-stop shop place to shop online, and you've got free returns and you've got all these things that keep your brand alive, you could kill that brand very quickly if you're delivering people's ice cream to their door and it's already melted, or the lettuce leaves were all wilted
brown, and
or the fish didn't smell good. It wouldn't take you too many times, even if you had decades worth of credibility with those customers, to put a severe strain on your brand. So food retailers, if they focus on quality and focus on outcome, continue to focus on their operational expenditure so they can bring high value to their customers, can create or raise the barrier of entry for anyone coming into their space by raising the barrier of quality. And we're absolutely all about, again, recognizing our customers' business models, the competitive dynamic that they sit within is an important part of that, and helping them achieve what they want to achieve within that.
I love it. You know what? What I appreciate the conversation we're having is truly the articulation of the value of technology, digitization, but as it pertains to something that's really meaningful. You know, we throw around digitization all over the place, but this really brought it home to me. I really appreciate that, Jason. Thank you very much. We're going to have to wrap it up, unfortunately. Are you active out there on LinkedIn?
I am indeed. My profile's on LinkedIn.
And then your website. If anybody wants to get a hold of you, what is the best way?
So our website is www.ims-evolve.com. And there is contact information on that site that would steer you to the right place. And also feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn.
Fabulous content, fabulous insights. Thank you, Jason, very much for being on the Industrial Talk podcast. You're a rock star in my humble view. How's that?
I sound much less like one than you do. I'll say that.
All right, listeners. Again, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. We're going to wrap it up on the other side. All links, everything that you need to know about Jason, we'll wrap it up on the other side. Thank you very much for joining. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
How about that? Didn't disappoint, huh? That is quite a gentleman. Jason Kay, IMS Evolve is the company. Great interview. Thank you very much for being on the podcast, Jason. All right. Again, we got to be all about, and I mean pinpoint focus on surviving, rebuilding, and definitely prospering. We depend on you. There's a gazillion people, and I'm not exaggerating, a gazillion people depending on you. You are the heroes in this story. You are in need of addition. I mean, you got to collaborate, right? You got to innovate. You got to educate. You got to move forward because you've got to retain that talent. You've got to manage that risk. You've got to save money, make money, and create a business that is resilient so that you prosper in the future. It can be considered a little overwhelming, but nonetheless, we truly depend on you. Thank you very much for what you do. Once again, you are the heroes. Go out to industrialtalk.com and get engaged. Get engaged. Be collaborative with us. Be, you know, innovate with us. Educate with us. Everything exists out there, and we're looking for your help because we've got big plans, because we want to be a part of the, you know, prosper in the future as well. Thank you. Take care. Be bold, be brave. Dare greatly. We'll be back a little shortly.